It's the best time of the year. Football season.
Atlantic keeps it, runs 20, 15, to the 10, to the 5. Touchdown, Joel Atlantic!
Your number one source for Cyclones football. It's former Cyclones talking Cyclones on CycloneFanatic.com.
Landing out of the shotgun, looking to throw. He fires to the end zone for Daly. Touchdown, Iowa State!
This is Barely Audible with Jeff Woody, Zach Spears, and Austin Arnott on CycloneFanatic.com.
Yes. Hello, Cyclone Nation. Welcome on into this week's edition of Barely Audible on CycloneFanatic.com. I'm former Cyclone offensive lineman Zach Spears, and we'll be joined shortly by former Cyclone greats quarterback Austin Arnott and running back Jeff Woody. The Cyclones won big on Saturday over San Jose State 44-10, led by their two-headed quarterback monster of Joel Anning and Jacob Park, who combined to go 20 of 27 on the day for 301 yards and 5 touchdowns. Running back Mike Warren also shined with his first 100-yard rushing day of the year, and he also caught 3 passes for 68 yards. The entire offensive unit had 503 yards on only 61 plays. The patched-together offensive line continued to look good, allowing no sacks in the game. The Cyclones' defense helped set the tone in the blowout win by sacking the Spartans' quarterback 4 times, picked off 4 of his passes, forced a fumble, and broke up 8 passes. And today on the show, we'll talk about the awesome quarterback play from Saturday, Mike Warren and the other weapons on offense, how well the defense played, what improvements can still be made, and how the team can take and use this momentum moving forward. With that, let's bring in the guys and get this thing started. All right, Austin, you're the quarterback. This quarterback play was pretty good on Saturday between the two of them. Break it down for us. What'd you like so much about it, besides the fact that they had a damn near quarterback rating?
Yeah, I mean, it was fun to watch. Both guys played well, and it's still that two-quarterback system that you know, they kind of beat it to a pulp on the air as well about how Coach Campbell is notorious for using the two-quarterback system in the past, had guys go, you know, almost an entire season until one at Toledo until one had an injury and went with one guy. But it was a good thing. It felt like every time one of them stalled, whether it was Landing or Parks, the next guy would come in the next series and they would have a scoring drive. So that was good. I mean, that's what you want. You want quarterbacks to feed off of each other and for it to still be a competition, because at the end of the day, that's exactly what it is. It's still a competition for who is going to be the guy full time. And both guys have made legitimate claims for that. I think when you look at both of them, and we talked about this at length in our group chat, group text, but Joel's your leader slash captain. He brings a physical aspect, and he's a tough runner. He obviously has the more experience, not a ton more, but he has more experience in the Big 12. I believe he's got a better handle on the offense. He's been there longer, not essentially longer, but he's been in the starting role all spring, and he probably has a bigger call sheet with Coach Manning than Park does. But Park, you know, he's got the gunslinger mentality. He throws a great ball. He's definitely more accurate.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and he's probably more accurate than Joel. And to be honest with you, I think that Park, and we've talked about this before, and Jeff, you did 2 weeks ago after we talked about the Iowa game, I think Park has the higher ceiling. He's a high-risk, high-reward guy and has made some mistakes, but he's got a higher ceiling, I believe. But Landing's going to give you that stability, the occasional missed throw behind. Take, for example, Trevor Ryan crossing the field early in the first half. And he just threw it behind him. It was wide open in the middle of the field.
So my take on that, just to make sure, because when I saw that, what I saw was a miscommunication, not necessarily a bad throw. Because what I thought was that Ryan was sitting farther in the zone than Joel was expecting him to sit. And it wasn't necessarily a bad ball. It's just that they weren't connecting. That's what I saw. So
right,
I'm with you, too.
But if you watched his feet on that throw – he got up in the pocket. He hitched up the throw. His heels, you know, damn near clicked. And that's not, as a quarterback, you don't want to do that. You want to have your feet. You always want to have a wide base, shoulder width base. So when he came up to throw that thing, you know, his weight's off balance and he's coming forward. And that's why the ball went high on him. If anything, that ball went high. I agree. They probably, you know, Trevor Ryan could have sat. Either way, the ball was high and right. But yeah, again, miscommunication and those little things that were pretty close to hitting. On a weekly basis, that are kind of negating our progress in those circumstances. So, but I liked how they played. I was very impressed. San Jose State obviously is not a world beater on defense, but they're a team. I mean, they played Utah tough the week prior, and they're not They're not the sisters of the poor here.
Jeff, your takeaways from the quarterback play.
What I thought is, I think it's like, hey, do you want this? And I know this is. Don't come at me with this whole, yeah, you're overselling it a little bit. For the analogy I'm using, do you want a Camaro or do you want an F-150? You're both going to have really nice vehicles. You're going to be able to do everything you want to do. You can drive on the highway. You can take it down the side roads. You can do whatever you want to do. It's just two very different ways to get there.
If I can afford it, I want both.
Exactly. Well, yeah. So with this one, Park and Lanning are both able to throw and are both able to run, and we saw that. It's just they go about it in two very different ways. Where Joel is more of a throw on the run, and he's a deep ball guy. He doesn't have a ton of accuracy underneath. He's a deep ball guy. And Park is going to throw a football through a freaking pinhole, but he's going to do it the way where he damn well wants to. So I think the thing that was nice about it is that they both can do what they want to do, but it's so different that by the time the defense sees who's on the field, the tendencies that one has versus the other, it's too late for them to process that. So what I thought is that both quarterbacks played really well, which was such a problem. Like San Jose State, I talked about this in the CFTV Live today. They played freaking one high, basically man coverage outside to Lazard and Daly. That's a great decision.
Incredible.
They didn't go away from it. They just decided to roll with it.
What was the thought process behind that, do you think?
The only thing I can justify that with is they had overconfidence in their corners. That they thought their corners could match up with Lazard, and they thought their corners could match up with Daly, and they thought their corners could match up with our slot receiver, their safeties and nickels can match up with our slot receiver. They thought that their dudes were as good as our dudes, which it's really nice to say they weren't. And so for us to be able to execute with both quarterbacks, and you see a deep ball and it's a dart from Lanning, like that was – I think that was the best ball of the day, is that deep ball to the number two receiver on the right side. That vertical, that was – it was gorgeous. So and usually Park throws the better ball, but I think that one – was the nicest ball of the day.
So, Austin, at what point does this it's all well and good and fun right now because they both played so well and the Cyclones won big. And this everyone the narrative is this is a good problem to have. When is this not a good problem to have? Is there something that can occur? Can the team start playing bad? One quarterback play bad, one plays well, and then all of a sudden this is an issue and it's stress and it is a distraction for the team and the two of the guys?
I don't see it as that. And like we alluded to earlier in the podcast, I think these guys are. I mean, Coach Campbell's going to play both of them, and from what I see and what I hear. These guys, you know, they get along on the field. They accept the competition, and the offense is bought into both of them. I mean, I can only imagine what you see at a park in practice. I'm sure he puts on quite a show. And same with Lanning. I mean, these kids are both talented quarterbacks. Now, who takes over when a push comes to shove? We still don't know that. We still don't know the answer. They might both play in all 12 games, and it wouldn't surprise me. But for the time being, I think we have to be satisfied with what we have now. And, yeah, the only thing that's going to deter one of their playing time is turnovers. And that's the one thing that you saw – that's one thing you saw against TCU where Lanning turned – I mean, we didn't turn it over, sorry, but against Iowa where turnover and just, you know, just kind of inaccurate, and then it was Park's turn, and then kind of you got the back and forth from the last two games. So
I think the other thing that might derail one or the other is that the wide receivers get into an obvious rhythm with one – and are out of sync with the other. And that doesn't – so, like, coming back to that Trevor Ryan pass, so Joel's mechanics weren't great, so that ball sailed high. But for the sake of a miscommunication, that's a really good example of a wide receiver or a receiver in general, tight ends, running backs, a receiver in general against a zone, when you get open, you sit down. And sometimes – coaching staffs like to have them sit in a specific area. Some like to have them replace a safety. Some like to have them replace a linebacker. Some like to have them sit early. Some like to have them run a little bit and sit far out. Just it all depends on the familiarity with the quarterbacks and with the coordinators. And if the receivers are much more familiar and one of the quarterbacks gets much more accustomed to reading where his guys are going to sit and where his guys are going to run, and the other guy is way deficient and obviously deficient, I think that, outside of turnovers, is going to be the thing that would clearly give one guy the job over the other.
So do you stick with this, Woody? Do you stick with the script then, if you're Coach Campbell, or do you just play it by who's in the groove? If both are just doing, you know, both are playing well, but no one's doing anything special or in a rhythm, do you continue to stick with, you know, you get three series, and then, you know, by the middle of the second quarter, you start feeling who's got the hot hand, or how do you do this?
That's what I would do. I think you at least give the first quarter and a half. I mean, again, unless it's like right off the jump, where Park has three plays, throws a perfect dime for a touchdown, puts Landing in, you go three and out, put Park back in, throws five plays and a touchdown, put Landing in, he throws an interception. Like, at that point, you're pretty sure who's having a good day and who's not.
Yeah.
But even if it's like one guy goes a first down, punt, and the other guy goes first down, punt, and then the other guy comes out and goes three and out, and then the other guy goes touchdown drive, it's still a push, because there's a lot of scenarios that can change which one's doing what. And to play devil's advocate for having two quarterbacks, if you're Baylor, you can't prepare for offensive tendencies like you normally would, where
Correct.
you have to come up with two completely separate game plans, and you got to base them off which quarterback is in the game. So, hey, number seven's in. Number seven likes to run. Number seven likes deep balls to the middle of the field, and he likes to throw the outs to the field. He likes that. He likes those concepts, and he's a powerful runner, so you better load up the box with another guy. Okay, well, now Park's in. Number 10's in. Well, now we have to move everybody back because the kid's got a cannon. He likes to sit in the pocket and throw. So it's two completely different game plans that your kids have to learn, and you get the same amount of practice time. So if Landing and Park are able to execute at the same level they did against San Jose State for the rest of the season, that's actually that's a detriment to opposing defenses, not a good thing to have one quarterback, because now you cut the functional time of the defense in half.
So I wanted to talk about Mike Warren, because I know the last few weeks we've all focused on Mike Warren, the running back here, and we've seen him get a little better each week, and then Coach Campbell called him out after the second week, and then he played really well last week, and then he got even better this week. Obviously, he was a big part of the win with over 100 yards rushing, but also 68 yards receiving. And, Jeff, you didn't think we would see the full-on Mike Warren yet, and we finally got 100 yards rushing and nearly 70 yards receiving. Is this the full-on Mike Warren that we've all been expecting, the one that we can expect to see and the one that we wanted to see all season long? Is this him? Has he finally arrived?
I'd still grade him at about a B.
Wow, really?
And
why is that?
On the Mike Warren scale, I'd still give him about a B because he's still not fully cutting it loose. And when I say cutting it loose, when you watch running backs and you watch guys like Dalvin Cook and you watch guys like Christian McCaffrey and you watch guys like, before he got hurt, Royce Freeman at Oregon, you watch guys like that, the really great running backs, which I don't mean to blow smoke, Mike Warren has the capacity to be that, at least in college. I don't know if he's big enough to play in the NFL, but at least in college, he has the capacity to be that. And he's still a little indecisive. And when you get to the second level, you have to make your move on a guy and say, screw you, I'm going to beat your ass and make that miss right now, but still understand and be in control where you don't have a 32-yard gain that ends in a fumble because you're trying to strain to make a play. So
that ball was on the ground again.
I'd still give him a B because he's still not fully cutting it loose. I think if he is able to cut it loose, I think maybe by the end of week 6, week 7, week 8, that's when we're going to see that Mike Warren, like we saw against Kansas last year, against Texas Tech, where he had 220 yards rushing on like 17 carries. Like, that's the Mike Warren that we're capable of every single game. So he was good, but he still wasn't fully cutting it loose. I mean, I would much rather have this Mike Warren than Mike Warren against Iowa or you and I, but we're still, he's a B right now, which is a good problem to have if a B is 170 total yards of offense.
Austin, did you like what you saw out of him?
Yeah, I did. I you know, and this is a tough thing to say. I'm a quarterback. I turned the ball before too, but running back, you know, you got a job. You got one job. Run the football, hang on to the football. What did Coach Herman always just say? Treat that thing like it's $1 million in a briefcase in your hand.
The hopes and dreams of everyone in Cyclone Nation are in your arms.
The hopes and dreams of the entire community of Ames, Iowa is in your arms. So when he puts it on the ground once a game, I mean, we can't have that. We are not a good enough team to give the ball away. We've seen that in the past.
And I think what's going on, to clarify what's going on, I think what's happening is that Mike has put a lot of pressure on himself because of the expectations that people have of him. So when all of his fumbles have been effort fumbles so far, and there's a difference between an effort fumble and a laziness fumble. A laziness fumble is on exchange, or you make a move and you get the ball way outside, and it just fumbles out in open space. That's a laziness penalty. An effort penalty is you're in the pile, you're going down, and you're straining for more yards, and it gets away from your body about 3 inches, and somebody pops it loose. Those are effort penalties because you're trying to strain for that extra 1.5 feet. Well, Mike, you got a 32-yard gain. Understand when it's time to go down with the ship. And I think that's what he's doing, is he's put too much expectations on himself to make these enormous plays and try and make the jaw-dropping, come out of the pile, stuff like that, where he's capable of doing that, but he's just got to be a little bit smarter. And again, we talked about this on CFTV. The kid is a sophomore still. He's a sophomore. He's really good, but he's a sophomore. He's still learning.
Let's see, the defense. We didn't talk a lot of defense last week. The defense only allowed 10 points this week. Austin, what'd you like about the defense? Later on in the show, we got a really good question about the defensive struggles, because there were still some. And in our group text that we talk, the three of us in every day with Alexander Robinson, the two of you pointed out several things. You know, some are nitpicking and some are glaring that a lot of the fans are going to see too. But let's keep it positive right now. Our nod, the defense was pretty good. What'd you like about it?
You know, I got to say one negative. The run defense is still not where it needs to be. Obviously, we know that. But the positives you take out of that with watching our defense, I mean, how good is Peavy going to be, guys? That kid, was he a sophomore? And he's making plays left and right. I mean, he looks the part. I mean, he's only 5'9", but he'll be okay. He's long. He's long and competitive. And Kamari Cotton-Moya, what more can you say? I mean, that guy is the heart and soul of that defense. Leads the team in tackles, led him in tackles last year. You know, the igniter of that of that defensive performance on Saturday, I believe, was that first and goal from the two, where we held him to a few, you know, held him.
Yep.
Kamari Cotton makes two or three plays in a row, and then Brian Mills comes up with a big play. Was it on fourth down? Did they go for it on fourth down, or they kick it?
No, it was third down. They kicked a field goal.
Kicked the field goal.
But that
third
down. They would have probably gone for it had Mills not gotten a TFL, because it was first and goal from the two, stop, second goal from the two, stop, third and goal from the two, 4 yard loss, and they were back on a six. And you're not going to go for it from fourth and six.
Absolutely. I love the way those guys played. PD, Cotton-Moya, Mills, Kane Seeley had a big day, as we alluded to. You know, we talk about this stuff quite a bit, as you fanatics are well aware. But Seeley, what do you have? 11 tackles?
11 tackles. Yep.
Yeah. See, I mean, that's a guy who's, you know, he's been in the system for a long time, was a Rhodes guy, and now he's, you know, got in with this defensive staff and is making plays. So that's you know, it's all you can ask of the kid. So I like those four names right there. And the defense looked good. There was times, you know, like I said, with the run defense where it could have been better. But this was a confidence builder, holding the team to a low amount of points to going into, you know, the meat of our schedule with Big 12 play.
It was the first time we had more than three interceptions in a game since we beat Nebraska at Nebraska, Austin. And then it was the first time they've had four interceptions in a game since 2008 against South Dakota State, which was before Woody and I's time there. So. Back in the Cedric Johnson era, I believe, Austin. Back with Cedric
Run
Johnson.
Run deep, too.
Yeah.
Go deep, too.
Hey, Jeff, your thoughts on defense. I was really impressed with the defensive backs. Four interceptions, eight PBUs, and, you know, we've heard a lot about how the secondary this year is big, they're physical, and they're very well capable of competing with Big 12 offenses, and it was refreshing and nice to see them step up and not only make a few plays, but they made a lot of plays.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the takeaway that I got from the game was our pass rush, when we want to be, is really good. when we know how to get there, and that's triggered by Justin Thomas. And that kid, when you on Saturday, there were times when I just watched him, and he looked like freaking Javon Kearse. And now that's because that offensive line was really bad at pass protection. They were decent at run blocking, but they were really bad at pass pro. And Justin Thomas made those. I mean, at one point, one of the pressures, it wasn't one that led to an interception, but one of the pressures, he literally swam a guard, and the tackle tried to pick him up. He put one hand in the middle of the tackle's chest and walked him back with one arm onto the quarterback's lap. Yeah. Like, stuff like that is, you can do, if you can do that against a subpar defensive line or offensive line, then you can do stuff that's almost as good against a good offensive line. And that was what was really impressive to me, was him and Jaquan Bailey on the other side, that puppy. He's just a kid,
yeah, young
he's
guy.
A freshman. He's starting to learn a little bit what to do. I think Mitchell Myers is doing a good job of teaching those guys how to be gap responsible. I think from a positive side on the defensive line, the negative side, I thought the interior of the defensive line was pretty porous. And I didn't see a lot of pressures, nor did I see a lot of stymieing double teams. Because when you're getting run blocked and you're getting a double team, you either have to split that double team or you got to hunker down and not let it move. And we did neither of those things on the interior of the defensive line. I think the only guy that I saw that did that was Pierre Aka. And everybody else was getting moved around. And so from a perspective of how we have to improve, it's right there. It's the interior. It's the heart of the defense. But because of the pressure that they were able to get, the defensive secondary was able to be really physical, like really physical, because they knew they didn't have to cover forever. And they knew that there was most likely only going to be a 2 or 3 man route because they had to hold extra guys in to protect. So like the interception that Nigel tipped to Kamari, like that was, I guarantee you that those guys saw that in slow motion because of how well they were able to play that. That's what that secondary is capable of doing if we just get a little bit of pressure on the quarterback. So I think if this defensive line play continues against passing offenses, then there's a chance that secondary stays that good for a while. Now, 4 interception goods, probably not. But that physical and that tight in coverage, if they know their front four is going to get there, I am really pleased with how the passing defense was.
That's all for the San Jose State film review there. Wrap that up. Baylor's on deck this week. The three of us, Jeff Woody, myself, and Austin Arnaud, will all be in town in Ames at Jack Trice Stadium for the football game on Saturday at 11 a.m. against Baylor. I'm coming in town for Austin Arnaud's Hall of Fame induction into the Ames High School Athletic Department Hall of Fame, so we'll be in town for that. If anyone out there is doing a tailgate, cooking breakfast before the 11 a.m. cook-off, feel free to tweet at me at Zachlopedia, Zacklopedia, or any one of the three of us. Let us know, and we would be more than happy to come by and test out whatever food and beverages you have at your tailgate. Let us know, and we hope to see you on Saturday. Have a great rest of the week, everyone. Go State. Peace.